This episode of the Rick Emerson Show is made possible by our good friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
The following is a production of the Emerson News Network.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
Hello, Americans. This is Paul Harvey. Stand by for news. On Cullendon Lane, Jacksonville, Florida, Chuck Buick finally gave up. Chuck enjoys marijuana, so he decided to accept Paul Harvey's suggestion. He gave up. He went to the phone. He called me. He ordered a bong. Bong, that's a pipe used to smoke marijuana. I want you to hear this carefully because you're thinking about a Valentine's Day present for somebody you love very much. Quote, my marijuana bong arrived Saturday, and after I opened the box, I was in shock. My eyes were locked open wide. My whole house was now a concert hall. I went to the washroom, and even from there, it sounded like a real live lady singing right outside the door. Quote, with heat eating your ears, you're gouging out and tearing loose and pulling apart, gulping air and tasting black. Your windpipe is closing, and you've lost track of which way is out. There's a searing ember down your neck. Search, rescue, ventilate. Somebody's singed a kitten. Quote, I'm listening to all of my old CDs again because I have never really heard them before. Now, for that Valentine's Day gift, it's not too early for you to choose a bong. If you're anything but happy with it, I'll buy it back. To locate your nearest dealer, telephone 1-800-282. Bong.
Woke up this morning, heard the words to your song. Never meant to hurt you, but know where I went wrong. Raise you to understand all the good in life. Somehow I lost my way, should have taken my advice. I love you so much, just one chance to make it up, because a father's love will never die. We'll see things through no matter what the reasons why.
Father is supposed to protect you, not you.
Funny, cause it's true. I'm alive. It is 19 minutes after the hour of one, and this the month of September in the year of our Lord 2010. Thank you for coming along and making a part of your listening day live, I say, from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, America's new home for whimsical fun. This is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It is Monday. It is Monday, September 27th. 2010. Bong! I don't have it here. I had an edit, actually, of just Paul Harvey saying the word bong. which is awesome. I'll have to dig it up. It's in my archive somewhere. It's just that word excerpted, which for a while was actually, it wasn't my ringtone, but it's like on my BlackBerry. I had just all these different tones. If I would get an email at different accounts, like something just sent to like to my business email would make one noise. Something that was sent to like, you know, rick@rickemerson.com, like a, you know, the listener email or whatever, make a different noise. And that noise was in fact bong. So anytime anybody would send me anything to rick@rickemerson.com, like in my pocket, you would just hear Paul Harvey go bong, which is fantastic. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. If you would like to engage with us telephonically today, well, first of all, it's impossible. Wait, now it's possible again through science. It's 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. If you want to dial us up on the telephone, that's how you do that. It's 503-505-6964. You can also message us directly or just do that weird, creepy thing where it sounds like you're in the room with us via Skype. That's Rick Emerson Show. It is Rick Emerson Show. That's how you do it. That is our username at Skype. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Dawn Taylor can be reached as well. It's Dawn, D-A-W-N, @rickemerson.com. And the text box is open as well. We're awash in communicative methods. The ways in which you can actually give us your thoughts, I mean, they're almost beyond counting at this point.
You could also send us a message via carrier pigeon.
I'm sorry, I thought I was turning to the printer because I thought you were going to make a whole riff out of that.
No.
You were really just saying...
No, I was trying to think of other clever ways
Pony
that
Express.
They could send Pony Express.
Semaphore, exactly. Smoke signals.
You could send one of the Baker Street irregulars by with a note.
You could cunningly plant a micro dot on the back of an envelope.
That's right.
All right. And we're done. It's 503-505-6964. Here's what's coming up today. We have a taser watch on the way today. Snuff watch. I'm not even sure who died. I don't want to know. I like for it to be a surprise. You know, I don't use... What is your homepage when you open up your computer in the morning? Like, what browser do you use, first of all?
I use Firefox.
Okay. What's your homepage?
I have one of those cobble-it-together-yourself Google
Oh, like
pages.
A news feed of, like, you know, or it's like a bunch of crap.
It's got a little box that's my email, and then it has... I don't know. I can look at it right now. It's got a little thing that tells me what the weather is.
It's like headlines and a search thing and an email thing.
Yeah, it has headlines. It has a little to-do list thing that I can have in one corner.
So do you do this, though? When you open up your Google News in the morning or your homepage, do you sort of excitedly look to see if a celebrity has died?
No.
See, and I do every day. Yeah. But I don't do it as much now because my homepage used to be Yahoo. And then I get tired of it. It was just bulked up with crap. So I switched to Google. And I don't, it's not Google News. It's just the regular Google. So now I'm denied the thrill in the morning of firing up my web browser and just waiting to see. Even if it's someone I liked. You know, like when Johnny Ramone, I think, died. You know, it's sad. But at the same time, you get a little thrill. You're like, aha, celebrity death. Because that's way more interesting than normal death, you know? And not as sad somehow.
I think I have a different attitude towards news now that I have to actually spend, you know, a couple of hours gleaning it for Legion of News and for this show. So it's like now I have this whole process. I have this whole ritual of going through these different news sources every morning of like, you know, sitting down with a coffee and pulling up the web browser, looking at my email to see if there's anything really important that needs to be dealt with. And there never is, because what's going to be important that I need to deal with? And then, and then I go and I look at the local news, like KGW, KPTV, those things, and I start looking for local news stories. Then I broaden out a little bit. I look at the AP wires, and I go to CNN, and I look at the different regional news sources. Then I have my own specific...
You're so much more organized than I am. This is like expanding like an email thread or something. I mean, this is like a... This is where, like, hundreds of layers deep into your news gathering. I just rely on the audience to send me stuff. I just open up the email, and they're like, hey, look at a picture of this colossal squid attacking a thing. Or, and I think I've sussed out your snuff watch. Does it rhyme with Meg May?
Yes, it does.
Okay, so if you don't know what we're talking about, then it doesn't matter. But if you do, then you do, and then it's genius all the same. Because that... Tom Likas used to say this thing. He used to say that if 100 people emailed him a story or you know something that was going on, it didn't matter whether he cared about it or not. If 100 people emailed him something, he would do a whole hour on it because that meant that like the people in general were talking about it. This story, the snuff watch today, I woke up this morning and it's like I checked my the email, my phone.
I must have had 15 emails just sitting there waiting to be open, and they were all that, with like all caps, like, oh my God, it's the best snuff watch ever. And the best one was the one that just said, like, this guy made a huge mistake.
Yeah, I'd already pulled that one and had it in the queue of things I was going to print out. And then I checked my Dawn at Rick Emerson News. And yeah, like three people had sent it to me. So I was kind of like, okay, obviously it's an important
thing
story
that people want to hear about. So
it's
we got a snuff watch coming up today. Taser watch, clergy watch. We will recap last night's Mad Men. So last night, Mad Men Season 4, Episode 10. Last night, the name of it escapes me, but I don't suppose it really matters. But that was last night, Mad Men, and then the return of Dexter last night. Last night was Dexter season... I thought it was season 4, but it's already on season 5.
Yeah.
I don't even know how... I don't even remember what seasons 2 and 3 were. Season 1 was Ice Truck Killer. This is like Survivor. You remember Richard Hatch and then nothing until Spencer and Heidi?
Yeah, season 2 was the one where he was working with the guy who was like suspicious of him, wasn't it? So it was mostly about him.
That
ducking Dopes? That guy? Dopes?
I thought that was also season 1.
Was it?
I don't know. All I know, here's what I remember. I remember Ice Truck Killer season 1. I remember last year, Lithgow. I don't remember anything between those two, and I thought Lithgow was season 3, but maybe I'm thinking that because Trinity Killer, third season. Anyway, so last night, season 5 of Dexter started, and then also Eastbound and Down with Mr. Danny McBride, which is just friggin' awesome. And I know I'm not trying to rub it in, so I know you haven't watched it yet, because there was a lot of TV to watch last night, and there's going to be for like a month while Mad Men continues to run. 2.5 hours a night, baby. You know, every Sunday.
I'm getting up at like 5 a.m., so that I can watch all the TV on Monday morning.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, look, I mean, what else are you going to be doing with that time? Sleeping, studying, learning, reading, spending time with loved ones.
Yeah,
you know,
that.
TV is a loved one that doesn't talk back. You know what? TV speaks when spoken to, Don. I say, turn on. It turns on and it amuses me. And I say, turn off, and it shuts up. Television is really, you know, television.
It really is the perfect lover.
Yes. Sister, mother, secret lover, Don. So Eastbound and Down, which I really only watch because of you. Because you were the one who got me to watch Observe and Report. And Jody Hill, who made Observe and Report, does Eastbound and Down, which is just...
And Observe and Report being one of those movies that I was coming in and talking about movies on your show before. And then after I saw that, that was one of those ones like, oh, you have to see this.
Yeah, and man, I was just...
Just ignore the commercials, because it's not doing it justice.
That's
just
the best favor you've ever done me, is when you came in and you recommended Observe and Report, and you were like, ignore the trailers, ignore the promotional campaign, ignore the poster. You're like, here's what you said. You go, it's like Taxi Driver in a mall. And I was like, Taxi Driver in a mall, that's wacky, don't you? You said, no, seriously, it's like... And then here's the other thing you said about Observe and Report, which is such a genius movie. I mean, it's just a work of just sheer unhinged brilliance. The other thing you said about Observe and Report is you said that a lot of times in movies, or just in life, people will figuratively use the phrase, well, that guy's really off his meds. And you said, no, not figuratively. He's literally off his meds. And he's got a gun. And I was like, I am sold. And
and it's a comedy.
And it's just freaking fantastic. Yeah. And so now I watch Eastbound and Down. I still got to go watch Foot Fist Way, which is the other movie that guy did. I won't give anything away about Observe and Report. I mean, you've seen the poster, which is his Mexican baseball is never... He's about to get a whole lot sexier, so you kind of know the gist. But the thing about Eastbound and Down, and I'm going to do this now because we're not going to really have a whole recap because it's like a niche program and you didn't watch it yet, and so there's no point. I will just say... That guy, Jody Hill, has this real knack for showing you things that are horrible in some way that as you are being... That, like, here's the thing. It's like, by all rights, you ought to hate that guy and the show. Just like in Observe and Report, you should have hated Seth Rogen's character.
Yeah.
You know, flat out hated him, not just been ambivalent. And you shouldn't have liked the movie, really. I mean, people, because it's just such a loathsome movie filled with horrible, unlikable characters. Eastbound and Down, even more so, almost... I'll just tell you this. It opens. I need to go back and watch the credits. As soon as I finished it last night, I went to bed because it was really late. I'm like, I got to get some sleep. So I didn't watch the credits. It opens and then cuts back several times to what appears to be a very real, very genuine cockfight. Like with the roosters in the Mexico and the thing, you know, and the dying. And I'm not saying it is. I'm assuming that it isn't because it doesn't seem like you could really do that these days. I don't know how they did it. Maybe it's just like where they had the roosters just sort of trained to like bonk into each other or something. I don't know. I don't know if you can train roosters. I have no idea. But it opens with what seems to be... I'll tell you this. If it's not real, it fooled me. It looks very real. And that's the sort of thing that immediately should put me off a program, because I'm not like a big animal rights guy, but, you know, that's one of the things that'll get me
to
turn off.
See stuff like that.
That's the thing that'll get me to turn off a television show, is if there's some sort of weird animal cruelty or whatever. But it's like, that guy has such a deft touch with the camera. And it's so, it's like, and the show is just filled, especially because now he's living in Mexico, the character of Kenny Powers. And it's just filled with such horrible, awful, racist comments. And, you know, but you're watching it and you're just going, I should be offended, but somehow through the magic of, like, verbal jujitsu, I am not. I find him endearing. Anyway, it's just, I can't wait for you to watch it. It's genius. Let's see. So Mad Men recap, Dexter will do the Week in Geek with Mr. Aaron Duran, and Don Taylor's tracking the following stories for you on this Monday.
A Detroit policeman is disciplined over a Facebook photo of a goat. A man who fathered 23 children is sent to prison after missing $500,000 in child support payments. And the Where's Waldo bandit is out of the hospital and in jail.
See, the news happened so fast, I can't even remember who the Where's Waldo bandit really was.
He's Porkchop's brother.
Oh, that's right. See, it just quickly falls out of my head. You know what I realized yesterday? And now the irony is that I've, or a word like that, is that I've forgotten it again. But I was going to say that there's some whole... Okay, can I ask you a question? And
sure.
Then we'll move on,
because
this is the news segment. We got to get stuff done. Plus, we have an announcement we're going to get to here in just one moment. So this is stage one of a much larger announcement. And you know the rest of this we'll get to on Friday, probably. So we'll get to stage one of a pretty bitchin' announcement here in just a few. I don't mean to sound cruel, and cruel isn't even the right word for it. Like, I don't mean to be sort of horrible, but... did a space shuttle explode just a couple of years ago? Like in 2004 or something? Somebody referenced the other day something as the space shuttle, like whatever, tragically showed in 2004. And I was racking my brain going, like, when? Like, I remember the Challenger blowing up, but I don't remember. And I'm not saying it didn't happen. It probably did.
Yeah.
But I felt like such a jackass because I couldn't remember whether or not another space shuttle exploded at some point.
Wow.
See?
I don't remember either.
But doesn't it seem possible?
Sure.
I mean, I don't mean possible like scientifically. I mean, it just seems like it's one of those things that might have happened that
it's also one of those things that I feel really stupid for
not knowing.
Being able to actually say, why, yes, indeed.
I didn't know. In fact, it was in that Bill Bryson book that I'm reading where he didn't even say tragically. I think as he said, as the Space Shuttle Challenger demonstrated in 2003, and it was some point about the flammability of something or other in the atmosphere or whatever. And I was sitting there going, like, I have no idea what he's referencing, but I guess it's possible that another space shuttle blew up. So I'm not trying to make light of it. I'm just saying it's like my brain perforated.
Columbia?
Maybe. Sure. I don't know. I don't even remember if it blew up. How would I remember the name?
I don't know.
I mean, blowing up is a binary state. You think that I would cling on to that memory at least, but no, I have nothing.
I don't know.
All right. Well, there you go. So
because
my brain is busy, you know. So I'm busy filing away, you know, like cockfighting, scenes from Eastbound and Down.
We do have a question in the text box. Somebody asked if April Big Cannons is on Eastbound and Down still.
Is that the school teacher?
I believe that's the school teacher.
Yeah, well, he lived right now. Again, there's no spoilers here, but he's living in Mexico. He's you know, because when we last left Eastbound and Down, he abandoned her at a convenience store and then sped off in like an RV or something. He's now in Mexico. She is pictured. There's a sequence where he is imagining what everyone is like in his absence, and they do a quick cut of like his family, his brother-in-law, her, the kids in the hall guy. He imagines what their life is like, you know, now that the warm blanket of Kenny Powers is no longer there to warm your heart, which isn't what he says, but that's exactly the kind of thing that guy says. So it's something like that, and he does remember her. And then he remembers her again in a most icky fashion, and you know what I'm talking about.
Well, that actress also, she's a regular now on this new series called Mike and Molly, I think it is.
I got nothing.
And it's the woman who played Sookie on Gilmore Girls.
Oh, yeah, okay,
and then
right.
And then this other guy who's a stand-up comic whose name I can't remember at the moment, who's a big, heavy guy.
Yeah.
And I watched the first episode of it, and it's not a terrible sitcom, but it's also not terribly funny, but it's about two, like, fat people. So, of course, they meet at an Overeaters Anonymous meeting, because that's, of course, the only way that two fat people...
Because no one else will love them, Don.
...ever meet each other. And the fat jokes are mostly self-deprecating, so they're not, like, aimed at other people, so they're not as horrible
as they could be. Are they shown eating a lot?
No, but they do make a lot of jokes about how much they like to eat.
Right.
Because, you know, and so it's not terrible. But anyway, the actress who played April is her sister.
Okay.
And she plays just sort of this perpetually high, always pot-smoking kind of. And she's, that actress is just sort of a comedic genius. So her,
I have no idea what she looks like when she's not playing that chick on Eastbound and Down.
She basically looks like that.
She has weird eyes then.
Yeah,
there's something wonky looking about her.
Yeah, she has crazy eyes and a great rack, and she's a little too tan.
Yeah.
But she actually has just brilliant comedic timing. Her character is horribly written. All she does is sort of stagger in to do some joke about, like, losing her bong or something and then staggering back out. But she manages to make that even that funny because she's just really good.
My final observation about Eastbound and Down is that, A, I know it's a niche show, so we're not going to dwell on it, but you really ought to be watching it. It's fantastic. Also, you know what that guy does, Jody Hill, what he does better than anybody in recent memory? Here's one kind of shot that that director does better than anyone currently working. The dramatic entrance to music. I mean, or the dramatic something. Entrance, exit, an unfolding, an action. He does a sequence where there is just a woman singing a Spanish language version of Night Moves. And he does, I swear to God, it's just a slow motion shot of her gyrating her ass at the audience while she's singing Night Moves in Spanish with a lounge band. And it's like, and it just is the coolest thing ever. That guy uses slow motion and music better than like anybody in the game. So well done to you, sir. Anyway, so that was my day yesterday was basically this. My day yesterday was catching up for my Saturday. We mentioned last hour during Legion of News, we had a story where somebody, there was some horrible traffic accident, but somebody was allegedly doped up on Ativan. And I mentioned, you know, why that's funny. I wasn't the one in the story, but I said, that's funny. I have a big bottle of Ativan and I haven't taken it for like weeks. And I said, but then Friday, my sleep schedule was so effed for the last few weeks, I had to get back on track because I had your birthday party to go to.
Yes.
So I took a big Ativan on Friday night, like a full on, like a huge. I slept until like 2 or something on Saturday, just dead to the world. I woke up, went to your birthday party, came home, and then spent all of Sunday trying to get caught up in the fact that I was like in a drug stupor and at your party on Saturday. That was my weekend, basically.
And you were getting over the massive amount of cornbread and cake that you ate.
Why? It's like you're fattening me up for the slaughter or something.
Well, no, I wasn't making you eat like 12 pieces of cornbread.
But you put it there, and it's like, I'm going to eat it. You know that the bready things and pastry, you know, the bread-type foods are my weaknesses.
I don't know which bready things are your weakness,
though. I love me some cornbread.
Apparently so. I had no idea. I did not know, first of all, that you loved cornbread. Nor did I know that you were such a lover of coconut.
Yeah.
And I conveniently provided both a massive homemade coconut cake and a whole lot of cornbread.
So you do this thing where it's like your birthday was on Saturday. I don't know when you started making the cake, but you send out this series of like announcements like, here's my invite, here's my second invite, here's my third invite, here's my fifth invite. And then like your final invite that you sent at your birthday party was literally just about like, I am busy making a coconut cake with coconut filling and coconut frosting. Also, there's extra coconut on top.
Actually, that was just a Facebook posting to tell the Facebook world about.
I love coconut, and the thing is, there's a finite number of foods that you can get coconut. It's not like you can just put coconut in like meatloaf or something.
Yeah.
So when you find it done well, it's really good. So there was like coconut, there was cornbread. Bobby Fatboy and his beloved girlfriend Bobby and Bob the Bobbies were there, and they brought like pumpkin cookie things, which I typically don't like, but they were really good.
They were like little cakes,
yeah,
with buttercream frosting. They were little pumpkin cakes. They were delicious.
Yeah, they were really fantastic. And so I just sat there and just had nothing but carbs and sugar.
Yeah.
I know you had actual like food, like chili.
Yeah,
I didn't even get to that chili. No, I skipped right to the cornbread and just kept shoving it into my mouth.
Well, that's kind of what I did yesterday because it was the thing. Then Siegfried came, and Siegfried's contribution to the party was he brought a big box from Voodoo Donuts. And so, like, I got up Sunday morning and I had one of those maple bars with bacon on it, which I've never had before.
Right.
And I remember seeing Anthony Bourdain when he had one and he was oohing and aahing over it. And I've always thought, you know, I'm not really on that sort of bacon is good in everything wagon.
It seemed too gimmicky to
but
be good.
I gotta say, though, oh my God, it's delicious.
Yeah.
The bacon, the maple bar with the bacon on it is delicious.
Yeah.
So I had that for breakfast. And then later it was kind of like, what am I gonna eat? I'll have a piece of cake. So I had some cake. All I ate yesterday was like donuts and cake. So I feel like such crap today.
It doesn't count though because it's birthday food. It doesn't. It's like road trip food.
I just gave myself. Yeah, I gave myself permission. Like it's the weekend. It's still my birthday. I can eat nothing but
it's
donuts
your cake.
And cake.
It is your birthday. It's food for your birthday party. And it's like vacation calories. Do not count. Things, your birthday food, and that's all stuff from your birthday. That all counts. So I would say to that, and by the way, just the other observation, Laura was dead on about something. We've talked about your house before and your sort of unusual decor, and your house really is fantastic. It really is, like, no lie, one of the best decorated houses of anybody I know, but in a sort of like horrible childlike kind of way. In exactly the way that I would decorate my house if I had, like, you know, more time and, you know, and just a better eye for things. Because, like, over the fireplace, you have the big Walter Cronkite framed, you know, oil painting or whatever, which is genius. And then you have, like, zombie children. And then in the bathroom, it's like one of those paintings that changes the picture when you, like, you turn it, like, it's a baby. No, it's a vampire. It's a baby. It's a vampire. Yeah. And, like, an Elvis on a crucifix. And it's just, it's awesome. But Laura made this observation as she, I think it was because of Elvis on a cross or something, and then also the vampire child in the bathroom. Mm-hmm. And Laura said, you know, none of our parents would understand this house and its decorations. She said, can you imagine, like, my mother coming here to, like, you know, just to see Dawn for whatever reason, like, if my mother was tagging along with this, and she went into the bathroom, and there's, like, Elvis on a crucifix and a child with fangs, like, lunging at you from a painting. Like, what would our parents think?
Yeah. And my Q-tips are in, like, an old apothecary jar.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
But it's awesome.
But the thing is, you know, I try to be, like, sort of Pee-wee's Playhouse meets Martha Stewart. I try to be tasteful as well as, because you can get really cheap if you have, like, a lot of tchotchkes and little kitschy items and stuff.
You so pick and choose,
though. I try really hard to actually.
Yours is like, it's like Martha Stewart meets like a sort of Morticia Adams kind of a thing. Which I dig. No, it looks fantastic. I mean, and it's just, you know, sort of always, you know, it's like a perpetual Halloween. Whereas, like, my house is basically just perpetual. I mean, I might as well just live in the Ozarks. It's like I look at my house and. Which I shouldn't say because my wife has actually spent a great deal of time actually redoing the interior of our house. But it's like, and I'm not trying to knock my wife, I'm really not, because our house looked a million times better inside than it did when we moved in. Because our whole thing was we stay home a lot, and especially during winter and whatever. So our house is actually really, as much as I don't like to use the word cozy, like it is sort of cozy and it's, you know, very nice tones and whatever. It's all very beautiful inside. And, you know, it's not expensive, but it's nice. But it's like, we're both really busy. She works like 12-hour shifts. I'm, you know, always doing something. We have the two dogs, and we don't have kids, so it's like we never really need to have it tidy, like for safety reasons. Like, we can leave a bottle of aspirin on the counter or on the floor, you know, for like forever. We can, you know, I'll just leave this knife dangling on the edge of the counter. So we never really need to clean. So as a result, it's cluttered a lot. And then we'll do things like running out of clean glasses. And so this just leads to, like, the other day when I come home, and I swear to God, my wife was one of keep in mind, my wife has gone to 10 years of college. My wife went to a 4-year college, and then she went to nursing school, and then she's, I don't even know if I should say, well, I don't even want to jinx it, but she's getting another advanced degree. My wife has gone to school for longer, like, to college, nearly as long as I went to school, like, in toto. So she's one of the smartest people I know. I go home. She's sitting on the sofa watching Oprah, and I swear to God, she's drinking something out of a mason jar. And it was like a beer, I think, which is what makes it awesome. I think she had actually poured like a fat tire beer into a mason jar, drinking out of a goddamned mason jar on the couch while watching Oprah. And it was, you know, to the casual observer, it might not appear that you were from a cultured family, is all I was saying.
Well, you know, I had people over on Saturday, and we'd have the thing. And it's like at one point, somebody asked me for a glass. A friend of mine was like, I'd like to drink my beer out of, like, a real glass. I was like, I have real glasses. And I'm looking, I'm going, where are my glasses? What have they? Yesterday, while we were, like, tidying up, Patrick pointed out, because, you know, over, like, the last year, I think we've broken all of our glasses. I was like, yeah, I just noticed that really last night. Because the thing is, you know, we don't, you reached up for a glass and you got one of those. Both Patrick and I are like 12 years old. We drink almost everything out of these giant double-walled plastic, you know, sippy cup
like
things.
Like an underdog tumbler.
Yeah, so the actual real glasses, you know, get broken and they disappear.
The only real glasses I actually have, I have these really nice pint glasses from England. That Siegfried gave us a few years ago when we got married.
Yeah, I realized the next day, the person who wanted to drink their beer, that in the cabinet I have in the dining room that has, like, dishes and glasses and wine glasses and stuff, and I realized, I actually have these really nice Waterford iced tea glasses, these big tall, that I got as a wedding present. And I don't know who they came from because there was no enclosure saying who gave them to me. And it was one of those things that, like, I didn't return them or anything, but
into the cupboard.
But I've never used them for anything because, on the one hand, I don't really need them very often. And also, it's like, I always think, these are very expensive. And I'm going to use them once and I'm going to break them.
So 10 years
I've had these damn Waterford iced tea glasses and have never used them once.
Well, you know, but now they stay flawless. Or use them, they could be damaged. This way they're always ready to go at a moment's notice.
Because I really need those on display so people will know I'm classy.
That's right. Well, because otherwise you're just sitting there, you know. I know what you're saying. We're so behind already.
Yes.
It's the Rick Emerson radio program. I'm going to make this real brief announcement. We won't dwell on this a lot because it's part of a larger announcement we'll get to later on this week. I will just say, for reasons that will be revealed later on this week, that, you know, you heard us last week talking about ThinkGeek.com, and you had a lovely parting gift, a birthday gift from ThinkGeek.com, the tricorder, and of course we have the 11th Doctor's electric screwdriver?
Sonic screwdriver
from Doctor Who. Also the TARDIS USB port. Also the communicator, which is an internet telephony device. Those are from ThinkGeek. Now we're going to be giving those away later on. About a week or so, we're going to start giving those away, and we'll tell you how, and we'll tell you why at the end of this week. Don and I were talking about it. I think we'll do the reveal for why that's going to happen later on at the end of this week. But I will say, in the meantime, our good friends at ThinkGeek. .com have created a discount code for you. Yes, you. And by you, I mean me too. I could actually use it. I might actually use it before the show is even done. The code is Emerson, Emerson. So if you happen to buy anything at ThinkGeek, this is good through October 31st. So basically up through Halloween night. It'll give you $5 off an order of $25 to $49, and $10 off any order of $50 or more. So you don't have to buy anything particular. It's not on any one item. You don't have to buy a certain number of things. But the next time you're shopping at ThinkGeek.com, you type in Emerson as your code, Emerson. Get yourself a discount, and it's good all the way through October, all the way through midnight, October 31st. So more details on that later on in the week. And I wrote down here, I don't even know what this means now. I just wrote down jukebox.
Oh, yes.
Why did I write down, is that Jack?
Jack
in the Box? Why did I write that down?
Because I was going to tell you very quickly my story. I had mentioned before that there's this strange gnome-like little girl that works at the Jack in the Box over here on Powell or whatever that street is. I've gone there a couple of times, and she's always very, very cheerful and very odd. And she looks like she's about 12 years old, and she's always wearing, like, eyeliner and, like, frosted light blue eyeshadow. And she has this voice like this, and she's really cheerful. And so I stopped there to get the my requisite chorizo sausage breakfast burrito. And I ordered it, and I pulled up, and she's like, "We're going to have that chorizo burrito for you in just a minute. Would you like some water while you wait?" And I said, no.
Was this at a drive-thru or like in
this
the...
This is the same place, though, where, like, I waited, like 2 minutes behind somebody the last time I was there. And when I pulled up there, she's like, "I'm really sorry for your wait. Would you like a free drink?" You know, it's like, no, it's really fine.
I feel like I have to go experience this woman just in person so I can hear the voice.
She's crazy. And so, yeah, and so then this time it was like she offered me water. It's like, "No, thank you." And so how was your weekend? And I said, it was great, well, fine. And I said, "Yours?" And she said, "Oh, it was good. It was good, too. Do you have babies?" And I paused for a minute. I was like, no, I don't. It's okay. Well, you know, and then I can't read. She went off and then said, "Are you going to give away candy for Halloween?"
Is she just...
And I'm like, it's September 28th.
How old did you say she was?
She looks like she's in her early 20s. I don't know. She could be anywhere from like 20 into her 30s. She's like this weird, ageless, tiny little person that looks like she's about 13.
These sound like sort of housewifey, like suburban mom questions. It's weird that she would be asking you these things.
Well, then she told me, she told me something about, like, you know, I don't know, something about her weekend, and it was... Now that she's got a little one, time is really my precious. And she said, "What do you?" And so she asked me, "You know, you gonna give away candy for Halloween?" Which I thought was a little early to ask me that, but I was like, "Yeah, we'll do that." She's, "Oh yeah, do you get a lot of kids where you live?" And I said, "Not really, not since I moved to an apartment complex." She's, "Oh yeah, we used to trick or treat at the apartment complex when I was kid, but of course, you know, it was right there."
You know, here's what.
And I have nothing to say to that.
Here's what's happening with this woman. I'll guarantee you. Here's what it is. This is the woman who has kids. I mean, she works at Jack in the Box, obviously, so it's not like she's at home all the time. But she has kids, so when she's not at Jack in the Box, she's at home with no one adult to talk to. She longs for conversation with other adults, but because she has kids, the only thing she is now qualified to talk about, like in her head, the only thing that she can relate to is having children. So she seeks out, you know what it is? It's like me trying to seek out other people who are like, you know, watching Eastbound and Down. Are you watching Eastbound and Down? No, it's a great show. Really? Why don't you watch it
so I can talk to you?
That's the thing. So she's hoping you have kids, and then when you don't, she just plows. And when you reveal that you don't have kids, she goes to something that is an adjunct, but is like a sort of Venn diagram, like a crossover thing of giving out candy for Halloween. You don't have kids, but you might still be able to talk about that, and that's a thing she can weigh in on because she's a mom.
Yeah, it was just strange.
All other conversational avenues have been stripped away from her because she's a parent. And yet you're an adult. But it's, you know, it is like you meet parents. Have you ever done this? You go to a social gathering, and you and I are child-free, as they say. And, you know, whatever. Some people are good parents. Some people ain't. I'm not going to risk it. But you be at a party, and it's like you'll see adults there. And then you'll see two people who are not, like, married. They're not with each other. But they strike up a conversation. They both have kids. And then they start talking about, like, the Wiggles or something. And you're like, going... You're 40, you know, and it's like you're talking to some, you know, some girl or whatever, and it's like the only conversation you're able to have is you're talking about Gam Baba Babaloo or whatever the hell that thing is that's coming to town.
Yo Gabba Gabba.
Whatever.
The Backyardigans, which I know nothing about. I just have seen the name. It's some kid thing.
Right, but if you were a parent, you'd be like finding other people. You would have like a radar, like a gaydar, but for people who have like a kiddar. And you'd find people who have kids and you go like, so are you going to see Yo Gabba Gabba? Hey, they're something, aren't they? Wow. Hey. That's something. Hey, school, property taxes. Are you with me? Gabba Gabba. You know, it's like that's all you can talk about. All right. We should do this, then we'll get to our Mad Men recap here in just a few. And we have a brand new business partner that we're going to be talking about here in just a few as well. Let's get a little bit of news done. This is Don Taylor at the news desk right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
The suspect, nicknamed the Where's Waldo Bank Bandit, was behind bars Sunday after his Friday arrest in a Eugene hospital. Ryan Homsley, 29, was arrested at 2 p.m. where he was hospitalized since Thursday, the FBI said. Homsley suffers from diabetes and has a drug problem, his brother Noah Homsley said, adding that Ryan was at a hospital in Eugene. Records show he was booked into the Lane County Jail Saturday. He was being held without bail on a U.S. Marshal's hold. The FBI didn't give any more information on his condition and said Homsley would face a judge for a federal bank robbery charge once he was released.
And this is the guy, he's like, I am Homsley, brother of Porkchop, son of whoever.
Yeah, I've got a bomb. Oh, I guess I don't really.
And it's like his brother's a DJ
somewhere.
All right.
So he went into the key bank at Bridgeport Village and said, I have a bomb, give me money. But he didn't really actually have a bomb.
No one has a bomb. Robbing a bank, as dumb as that would be under normal circumstances, like now in 2010, it's just colossally dumb because it's not going to work.
No, and then it's like you're not just going to jail for being a bank robber. They're also bringing in Homeland Security.
Yeah, and
you know,
also,
now it's like an FBI thing, and it's terrorism, and
plus, like, you're another idiot who tried to. I mean, the other criminals have got to have like zero respect for you if you're trying to rob a bank now, because that's just a thing that can't be done. I mean, I guess you could maybe walk out with the money, but there's always some damn dye pack or the bills are marked in some way. Like, yeah. I would be afraid to spend anything that I stole from a bank. And then, you know, or if you, unless you got a guy to launder it or fence it. But it seems like if you got a guy who can launder or fence, you're probably savvy enough. You're going to be robbing something else anyway. I mean, it just seems like a fundamentally that is a guy who's not thinking it through.
No, but I think that there seem to be some mental problems there possibly as well.
Well, and I suppose the drugs probably don't help with that.
Quite.
That self-medicating is perhaps not having the intended effect.
Sunday was the third year for the Sunday was the third year for the conservative Christian group Alliance Defense Fund's Pulpit Freedom Sunday, in which pastors around the country defy the tax code that restricts church and nonprofit political activity in exchange for tax-exempt status. This year, the group said approximately 100 pastors were challenging the law.
Pastors?
I barely knew her.
By discussing political candidates' positions on biblical issues with their congregations. Eric Stanley is a spokesman for the Alliance Defense Fund and explains the goal of his group.
I don't even understand the goal of the group. What is it? Is it to...
They're not... Okay, if you're a church and you're tax exempt,
you can't endorse politicians.
You can't endorse politicians to your congregation.
Right. Oh, but they're opposed to that. They want to be able to do it.
Yes.
So they want to be able to
It's not enough that they don't pay taxes.
No, they want to be able to swing elections and not pay taxes. All right. So this is some guy.
Our goal here is to hopefully test case this area so that a federal judge can take a look at this and determine that it is unconstitutional for any government agency to decide what a pastor can and can't say from the pulpit.
I got your test case. So this is the big trade-off that they made. They all fought, like that Scientology did this a while back, where they fought for tax-exempt status. But as a result, theoretically, they are no longer allowed to endorse political, which is just a bunch of, which is a load anyway, because obviously anybody who goes to a church knows. I mean, it's not like they're having to, like, you know, sort of like smuggle it to you, you know, or like send it via Morse code or put it inside a box of Cracker Jacks. I mean, if you attend a church, you kind of know what the church's opinions about things are.
I think what would be great is if they actually did take this to a federal judge and the federal judge said, you know, not only can you not endorse political candidates, but I think it's time we rethink this whole tax-exempt status thing, too. Thank you for bringing this to me.
It's one of those things that you always figure – you have two thoughts on this, if you're me. One, and there's got to be a million people who do this. The first thought is always, I'd make me a religion so I don't have to pay any taxes. But then you realize that every other jackass on earth has already had that idea. It's like those guys who want to just, like, sit around and, like, ingest buckets of peyote buttons or something in prison. So they're like, I'm going to be a shaman. And then
I'm going to be a movie star. It's really, you only get like a George Clooney or an L. Ron Hubbard, like, you know, once in a blue moon.
Yeah. So it's
the odds are against you.
Yeah. All right.
David Shelley is the pastor of Smith Springs Baptist Church in Nashville and did not endorse a candidate for a particular reason.
I stopped short of saying that I want to endorse a candidate, not because I don't believe it's right, but because we received several vulgar voicemails on the church answering machine. And some were threatening.
I don't even understand. I have zero understanding of anything going on in the story. It's all just resonating inside my head, but then becoming a sort of perpetual echo chamber of confusion. Here's Don Taylor.
An American policeman. Well, this was from Australia. This thing, so I don't have to say an American policeman. A policeman was disciplined after posting a photograph of two goats playing on the roof on his Facebook page because the image showed a crime scene. The incident occurred after Southfield, Michigan police took a call about two baby goats playing on the roof of a home. Police went to investigate and found the animals on a roof in the suburb of Southfield. It's an offense to keep the animals within the city limits. However, one of the police officers was amused by the scene and took a photograph, which he later posted on Facebook. The officer thought it was cute, said Police Chief Joseph Thomas, but that's a photograph of a crime scene. Mr. Thomas said the officer was disciplined after the incident, which occurred in March this year, and the photograph was taken down from Facebook.
Well, the more puzzling thing is, how did the goats get on the roof in the first place? That's what I want the story to answer. How would you get two goats on a roof?
I don't know.
I know it sounds like some sort of a, I don't know, Rick, how would you get two goats on a roof? And then I say something bawdy, and we all snicker. But that really, okay, can I just tell you this?
Yes.
Here's the thing. Here's a memory I've been carting around inside my brain for like 30 years.
Okay.
When I was just a wee child, and I was taking the bus to school every day, and it's like they come by and pick you up, and then, it's, you know, they truck you off to school. And we would, you know, you, as a kid, you go the same route pretty much every day. This is not like a public bus. It was, you know, the school district had. And so you'd see these houses like day after day. And I swear to God, there was this house on the route on the way to school, and it was like, you know, it was one of those like split-level jobs in the suburbs. You know, it's like one of the... They didn't really have McMansions then, but it was, you know, like every suburban family's dream home. And there was this house where not all the time, not every day, but like two or three times over the course of a couple of years, we would be taking the bus to school, and I look over, and there would just be a dog standing on the roof of the house. And I've been carrying that around inside my head for decades, trying to figure out what the F was up with that. I have no idea what the hell was going on there. The dog didn't appear to be unhappy or in distress. It wasn't like he was going like, you know, burr, burr, you know, and then like the subtitle is like, crap, I'm on a roof. How did that happen? It was like the dog just sort of seemed to be just kind of taken in the scene, just so he was zen with the whole thing. And I would sort of look out the window, and here's what would happen. The first two times I would say, hey,
Did you see that dog on a roof?
And then they look, and of course, by that time you'd rounded the bend, and there was no seeing the dog. And then it's like I was the guy with Harvey the rabbit, and you know, and then it, and the second time you point out the dog on the roof, and everybody looks over, and they think that you've, you know, the lithium isn't quite taking hold of your synapses the way it ought to. You learn not to mention the dog like a third and fourth time. But I swear to Christ, a third and fourth time, dog on a roof. But it wasn't like on a predictable. It wasn't like Haley's Comet either, where like every 6 weeks plus a day, the dog is on the roof. It would just. It was almost like the dog knew when other people were looking away, or perhaps distracted by the sight of a girl's exposed brassiere strap, and then he would appear to me and only me, and then he would vanish again.
I'm imagining this as like a scene from a Wes Anderson movie, where you know you're riding on the bus and there's this sort of like emo indie rock music playing, and you're looking out the window as the bus is going by, and we have that moving shot down the street, and we see the dog on the roof
making
then,
eye contact with me as arcade fireplace.
Cut back to like 10-year-old you looking out the window and watching the dog.
Yeah. I mean, it just makes no sense whatsoever. And again, I just stopped bringing it up, you know, because that's the sort of thing where they put you in a small room and they stare at you through a window.
We had a neighbor when I was a kid on up the block, and we would walk by his house every day. And he had this strange little, like, furry white dog. Looks kind of like your dog's, kind of this sort of...
A little puffball.
Yeah, a little puffball like a dog. And I don't know what the dog's name was, but... For some reason, I thought it was very funny one day, and I called the dog Kitty. I said, "Here, Kitty, Kitty," and the dog got really angry, and it just bared its teeth. And I discovered that if I said, "Here, Kitty, 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 Kitty," to this dog, it would get infuriated and start growling and snarling. So I would do that like every single day on my way home from school. I would stop and see. And this guy was one of those like weird, creepy guys. I guess every neighborhood has some weird retired man. Who realize now it's kind of odd that every day on my way home from school with my friends, he was sitting on like a folding chair in his driveway.
Newspaper on his lap.
Watching us walk home from school with his dog. But we would stop and talk to his dog, and I would say, "Here, kitty, kitty, just don't watch his dog," and just freak out. And then I would keep walking.
Okay, but
home.
That's the sort of thing that'll creep me out, actually, because it's like, well, what is up with that? Like, why that word? And how did that happen?
I don't know.
How did it come to be the case that dog responds to the word kitty by not just, you know, not responding, but actually responding with anger, like a desire to harm you?
Yeah. And why was this sort of weird, fat, greasy, overly tanned man in his 50s, who probably was not old enough to really be retired, why was he sitting on a lawn chair in his driveway every single day when we were on our way home from school?
Oh, I think we all know the answer to that, Don. Let's not traffic in willful ignorance here. Let's do one more here, and then we will get to our Mad Men recap and other things of that nature.
Okay.
Here, Don Taylor.
Well, let's do the snuff watch.
All right, here's your snuff watch for Monday, right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Here's Don Taylor with your snuff watch.
A wealthy British businessman who owns the company that makes the two-wheeled Segway has been found dead in a river in northern England after apparently falling off a cliff on one of the vehicles. The body of 62-year-old James Heseldon and a Segway personal transporter were found in the River Wharfe, and he was pronounced dead at the scene. Police said a witness had reported seeing a man fall Sunday over a 30-foot drop in the river near Boston Spa.
I regret this!
140 miles north of London. Police have not yet revealed further details about the incident, but do not believe anyone else was involved. A dozen members of Heseldon's family asked for privacy today after placing flowers at the heavily wooded accident site, which is popular with hikers and nature lovers. Heseldon bought control of the New Hampshire-based Segway company in December, made his fortune through the firm Hesco Bastion Limited, which developed a system to replace the sandbags used to protect troops. Hesco Bastion is based in Leeds, near the tough Halton Moor area where Heseldon grew up. Mobile Entertainment, which has offered Segway tours along the Mississippi River for the past 7 years, has had more than 40,000 customers, most of them new to Segway, ride the device without any serious injuries, said owner Bill Neuschenwander. Nobody's gone off a river. Nobody, he said, speaking from Minneapolis, Minnesota. I can tell you firsthand, I can't believe how safe this product is. People get it right away. The product is perfectly safe when people respect its limitations.
I have such mixed feelings about this. Here's the I made the mistake. You know what? The problem with the story, Dawn, is that I humanized the victim. I should have just stopped at the headline this morning and the subject line of the email, because like every third thing was like a Joe Bluth reference. One guy actually simulated like the way I don't have the email in front of me, but he simulated sort of the sound like when you fall off a cliff, how your voice you know gets quieter. And he simulated the like I've made a huge mistake, and you know, I was chortling to myself and you know feeling smug and sad. And then I read the article and he seemed like a really cool guy, you know. And he he was a hard scrabble youth who then grew up and you know founded this company that did you know he created these great products like for hurricane victims.
Yeah,
and then
no.
like lived in the neighborhood and hired young scruffy lads from around the way. And then, you know, but
what is he doing on a Segway at the top of a 30-foot cliff?
You know why? But here's the thing. He was, according to at least one story, and I'm not saying that you should Segway near a cliff. Clearly, I think nature has indicated now demonstrably that you shouldn't. But apparently he was testing, like, some new rugged, like, outdoorsy Segway, like, for the military or something. And I guess his whole thing was like, well, I'm going to use it in treacherous conditions. And I mean,
and
mission
so,
accomplished,
yeah.
I guess. But it's just, you know,
again, you're a freaking billionaire. You have guys for that.
It just sucks for the company, though. Like, of all the people, you know, to die, of all the people, and not just to die, but to die in, like, a horrifically public and perversely amusing, like, plunging off a cliff on a Segway.
Yeah, on the product. Using the product.
And you're the guy who owns the company. I mean,
yeah.
It's just, like, it's so many planets aligning there that I just don't even know how to feel about. My emotions are still, there's such a tangled ball of emotional yarn that I carry inside me about this morning. Hey, which president was it that had the accident on the Segway? I want to say Bush, but it seems like I'm just picking that.
No, it was Bush.
Really?
Yeah,
I'm not
Bush.
Just saying that because it seems likely?
No, it was Bush.
Okay.
Bush W.
Because those are the only two Segway accidents. It's interesting, actually. The only two Segway mishaps I even know of were like the guy who owned the company and the president of my nation. So, you know, so there you go. Have you ever ridden on a Segway?
No.
I keep wanting to do it, and it's like I keep missing opportunities. First of all, the fat-ass security guards at Lloyd Center have them. So it seems like one of these days I'd just be able to pay one of those guys like $5 to give me, you know, like a few minutes on it.
We got to be able to find somebody who would like bring us one here and we could do it.
We should totally do that. I came like this close to riding a Segway a couple years ago. Laura and I went to San Francisco and for Christmas, and there was some tour of like, I don't know, some like famous, it was like one of those like walking tours, but their gimmick was it was a Segway tour. So like a Segway tour of like famous like comedy clubs or a red light district or something. You know, one of those like from the turn of the century things. But the deal was, because there's so many hills in San Francisco, the gag was that it was a Segway tour. And it was freaking expensive. We ended up not paying. We forfeited like the little deposit. We ended up having to pay the rest of it because we just couldn't get there in time. I was legitimately bummed. Not because I even really cared about the history of it. I really didn't. I just cared about riding the Segway. And my plan was to just take it, to like rent the thing and then abandon the tour like a block in. But know the point where the tour, where everybody like, you know, reconvened later on, so that I could then return the Segway without them noticing that I was gone. That I could sort of do a Ferris Bueller joyride on my Segway through the streets of San Francisco.
I took a wrong turn. I got lost.
Exactly. You know, but it's like as long as I know when and where everybody's meeting back up again, then I can return the Segway. And then it's like my own slow speed Quinn Martin show.
Well, there's a couple of places apparently here in Portland that rent like skiing equipment and things like that, and they also have Segways.
Does it say how much I could expect to pay for that rental?
I'm sure. I just haven't really.
Because it seems like it's probably pricey, because things are like $10,000 each, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, which, you know, I don't want to get bogged down in a lot of Segway talk here, but maybe those things are somehow changing the world in ways to which I'm just not privy.
Well, there's an actual Segway tour that you can take that does like basically the Portland waterfront area. And takes you like Hawthorne Bridge, Morrison Bridge, that sort of thing. And it's $75 for 2 hours.
It seems like I would have seen that by now. Wouldn't we have seen a platoon of Segway drivers like going by you? I just remember the you kids won't remember this now because it's like 10 years ago. But the unveiling of the Segway, it was like prefaced with all of this, like, it's going to change the planet. And like Steve Jobs said,
and
it was like,
and we were all going to be buying them, and we were all going to be like traveling around our towns on our Segways instead of using cars and things.
And cities would be designed around this object. And they were just so full of themselves about it that they didn't even call it the Segway. They just called it the It.
Yes.
It. That's it. And there's now something else. Somebody's taken that. There's some other product they're unveiling like next week somewhere called the It. But as much as it's sort of interesting, like it just ended up being kind of a real big nothing. I feel like it's sort of a Betamax thing. Like, maybe in the future, some civilization will say, like, they didn't know what they had with the Segway. But, you know, that day is not today. So there you go. So that guy's dead. There's your snuff watch for... It's how much?
It's $200 for a full day at this one place.
Is that a full 12-hour day or a full 24-hour day or like an 8-hour day?
I think it's a full 24-hour day. And then it's like...
So $200?
And if you rent them, like, it gets cheaper per day the longer you have it. Like, you can have it for 2 days for $360 or 3 days for $495.
But I mean, it's like, what? That is almost exclusively got to be a tourist thing then because... Like, if you lived here, what would be the point beyond, like, you just want it for the one day?
Plus, I know. Why would you rent a Segway for a week? What is the point of
that? The only reason I can see doing that is if you did live, like, if you were vacationing maybe somewhere, and it was either, again, like San Francisco where there's a lot of hills. Maybe you don't want to rent a car, but you can't walk.
Yeah.
Because there's, you know, like L.A., you can't walk in L.A., but, of course, you can't really Segway in L.A. either because everything's 30 miles away. Everything's on a highway.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's the thing with Portland is it's like, I suppose, I could see it for, like, maybe a full day if you were going to stay exclusively on the west side or something like that.
It's just to be snarky. I mean, that's really the thing, right? It's just to show off.
Yeah.
You know what it is? It's like a pocket version of the Prius.
You can just be smug.
Yeah, it says several things. It says, like, I'm smart. I listen to NPR, and I understand all the stuff. I read Doonesbury, and I get the jokes.
And I have more money than you do because I can spend $200 for this for the day.
I have more money than you do, and then plus, you know, and it also sends the whole, like, and I care about Gaia, the Earth Mother. So it accomplishes, like, a whole bunch of things. But, like, all of that stuff, it's just massively expensive.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Could you take a peek over at our mobile stream stuff? It's fine? It's good?
Well, people are listening.
Okay, good.
Claiming there's an issue?
Well, Meebo Guest 164564, I have to say, I think if you're getting problems with it, it may just be you.
What did he describe the nature of the problem?
He's getting the, you are not authorized to open this file, but then it's also working on occasion. So it's cutting in and out on him.
Yeah, who knows? That sounds like, it depends on what kind of phone he's using and whatever. If he's on an Android-based phone, that is an issue, I won't say exclusively, but I will say of the big three, the BlackBerry, the iPhone, the Android, that is a thing that happens most often to Android-based phones. Beyond that, I cannot say. So okay. I'm looking now, and everybody else seems to be listening. So
yeah.
I'm not trying to put it on your narrow shoulders, friend, but
Sometimes it's just that's the thing. Sometimes it's just you.
I'm a wizard, but a feeble one.
I get a lot of these messages throughout the day going, what happened? I'm having trouble. It's like, you know something? The internet is fickle.
Yeah.
It could just be your Wi-Fi.
Exactly.
It's not necessarily us.
I had some segue I was going to do with a segue. See, I was going to segue, Dawn, into a discussion of electric vehicles and power.
Also, by the way, Jen says that you can apparently lease one directly from the Segway company for $200 a month.
I was going to segue.
I know.
Into it. Fine. Whatever.
So you're going to segue into...
No, it's gone. The moment's gone.
Ad?
It's passed. It's in the rearview mirror.
Our sponsor
Don't
thing?
Try to get it back. It's just sad. No, it's...
Segway.
Let it go.
No.
That ship has sailed.
Is this it? Your segue?
Okay, that was actually really funny, but it shouldn't have been. Here's the thing. That was funnier than it had any right to be. And I laughed at that, and I shouldn't have laughed. But what are you going to do? I am only human. All right. Here at the Rick Emerson Radio Program, we want to welcome that was instant karma right there for trying to peddle that cheap gag as humor just now as your larynx started to come apart. We want to welcome a brand new business partner to the Rick Emerson Radio Program, and that is Squires Electric. You can find out more about them at squireselectric.com. We should ask that guy, you know, Joe Squires of Squires Electric. He could probably answer, you know, because I'm just plagued by science questions like all the time. And I'm not saying that, like, you know, that everything could be answered, but it seems like, you know, that's the thing. I was talking to him about this. First of all, did you know, and I bet you didn't, so Joe Squires of Squires Electric, a brand new business partner here at the Rick Emerson Program and a supporter of the Emerson News Network. So he was an electrician, and I don't even know what the proper term for this is, an electrician slash plumber, which doesn't seem like a thing that's real, and yet I know it's real because he was, like, showing me the certificate or the whatever. But he was an electrician slash plumber, because I guess the two things are very closely related in ways that maybe my tiny brain can't conceive. But he was not only an electrician slash plumber in the military, He was actually on a nuclear submarine. So he was actually...
I do actually know that, but only because you told me that this morning before the show.
I think I mentioned the submarine thing. But yeah, so he was in charge of like the electrical and the plumbing system on a submarine. And I was thinking to myself, and then I think I actually just asked him, I said, well, I said, that's interesting. I wouldn't really think. And then as soon as the phrase was out of my mouth, I realized how dumb it sounded. Because, of course, that's the place where it needs to be taken care of. I wrote this down, by the way. He told me the greatest thing. He said that when he was on this nuclear submarine... I never know how this works. I never know if I should name the submarine or if there's some sort of code of whatever military, like, tact where I'm not supposed to say, like, what he was on. But he was on this nuclear sub, and he said that they actually, they taught you how to fix a steam leak on a nuclear submarine. And I made him clarify that this was real and not, like, a figurative MacGyver thing. They taught him how to fix a steam leak on a nuclear submarine, I swear to Christ, with a mattress and a belt. That's it. Which I guess whatever works. I guess a leak of any kind on anything nuclear is probably something you want to end.
Well, the thing is, if you're on a submarine too, you can't exactly call out for parts.
That was his whole thing. He's like, you know, there's no Home Depot you can swing by, and I had to acknowledge that was in fact the case. So you can find out more about Joe Squire's business, Squire's Electric. At squireselectric.com. And here's what you need to know. If it has to do with wires, if it has to do with wiring in your home or in your business, they can make your life easier. It's stuff that they understand and they can fix and they can repair, install, maintain, remove in some cases, so you don't have to worry about it. If you've got Ethernet wiring, your office intercom system. I mean, because if you think about it, this is like that Mystery Science Theater thing where Coily, the screw fairy, appears. No, it's the spring fairy.
Yeah, he's a spring.
A screw fairy is something else altogether.
It's all about how many things we need springs for.
And he has this cackle where he says, no springs! And he makes all the springs in the house vanish for like a day, and the guy realizes how valuable springs are.
And you drive it in your car, and it's like, here go the springs, and boom, they're gone, and you can't drive.
This sounds like a daft statement, but it's like you don't really realize. I sound like a clod even saying it out loud. You don't realize how filled with, like, wires every... I say this as a guy who's worked in radio stations my whole life. You don't realize that wires are everywhere. But it's like every single thing you press is hooked to, like, a 5 billion miles of cable that's, like, hidden in a wall somewhere. That's, like, I wouldn't know how to fix it. I would be that guy standing there with, like, a kitchen and bathrooms book from Bob Vila and, like, a screwdriver and just, you know, squinting my eyes and looking at the wall and not knowing how to fix anything.
Or you end up being like my dad, who was a fireman and who believed he could fix anything. And he did actually do contracting work on the side, you know, illegally, I guess, when he wasn't being a fireman. But he would also fix things around our house. And then after my parents got divorced, years later, someone would come in to fix something, whether it was plumbing or the wiring or whatever. And he'd go, who the hell did this?
This is a death trap.
Yeah, and that was my dad. This is wrong.
I remember my dad actually, when I was, dads have this whole thing about fixing stuff and then encouraging their children, usually their male offspring, to help, despite the fact that the kid, in this case me, clearly has no interest, like no ability, and really I have no business messing with any of that. And my dad will say, go over and screw in that, that electrical, interocitor switch or whatever. And I would go over and I would reach for a screwdriver and I would be extending my arm to attach something. And he would say, no, not that way. You'll blow your feet off. No. Here, use the... And I was like, I'm going upstairs now to hide. The point is, you don't have to worry about any of this because you got Squire's Electric to do it. They give free estimates. No job too small. No job too large. They have literally done, I mentioned this last hour, he's literally done a single light socket. But then they've done these massive condominiums, full office buildings. It has to do with wires or wiring in your home or your business. They can make your life a lot easier. They understand it, so you do not have to. They'll come and they'll do it right, and they'll do it right the first time. And as he actually told me, he said, they'll fix it that night. And he said, if they can't fix it that night, they'll get it working that night. And they'll get it fixed as soon as humanly possible. It's going to work, though, and it's going to work correctly. 503-252-1609 is the way you contact them. SquiresElectric.com is the website. SquiresElectric.com. 503-252-1609. A proud sponsor of the Rick Emerson radio program here at the Emerson News Network.
And if they send Ben out on the job, maybe he'll show you his Battlestar Galactica tattoo.
He keeps it in a private place. It's not that private.
No, it's on his arm.
It's on his arm. He could have others, though, that we don't know about.
That's true. I'm not going to ask him.
We should have ended this about 14 seconds ago. It started to get very awkward just now.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
The state attorney general's office has prosecuted thousands of parents for failing to pay child support. But none of those has been as outrageous as the claims and children piling up for Howard Veal. The Muskegon, Michigan man has fathered 23 children with 14 different women and is now more than $533,000 in arrears for his child support payments, according to the Attorney General's office, which has been pushing a case against Veal, tied to two of those children in Kent County Circuit Court. On Thursday, Judge Dennis Lieber sentenced Veal, 44, to 2 to 4 years in prison for failure to pay child support, which is a felony. With the sentence, the judge far exceeded the state guidelines, which called for Veal to get no more than 6 months in the county jail. "You are the poster child for irresponsibility," Lieber told Veal, who appeared surprised by the sentence. "You're an insult to every responsible father who sacrifices to provide for their children." "I was stunned and amazed," said Lieber, "of the scope of Veal's fatherhood and his failure to pay anything but a scant amount to most of those mothers."
And this is how many children?
23 children with 14 women.
What does it say? Is it all in the one part of the country, or is it sort of spread out? Like, is he like a Johnny Appleseed of bastard children?
It doesn't say. I'm thinking, let's see. That between 1989 and 1999, Veal impregnated at least one woman every year. Incredibly, in three of those years, the defendant impregnated three different women, the memo said. Wood said Veal was unable to remember the names of several of his children and could not say specifically how many he had fathered. For a few months at the end of 2009, he got a job working for the Muskegon Housing Commission, and some money was taken from his check that went to make portions of support payment, but the total back payments were not touched.
The real problem with the story is that nothing rhymes with Muskegon, because I was just so desperately trying to do like some sort of Okie from Muskogee kind of a riff, and it is just not coming together for me.
He has a home built in 1995 and two cars in, this woman who wanted child support has a Mercedes and two homes.
Is there a photo of this guy? I mean, it's impressive in some sort of negative fashion that he was able to spread his seed hither and yon.
There was a photo, but he was really unexceptional.
Unremarkable?
Yeah.
Did he have symmetrical features at least? Because that's really, I've been told that that's the most, that is the trait that people find the most desirable.
It was a picture of him from the side as he was being hauled off to jail.
A picture of him as he was groin deep in some other hapless woman. All right.
That's a lot of procreating.
It really is. On that note, let's do our Mad Men recap for today. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. So last night's Mad Men, Season 4, Episode 10, and here there be spoilers, y'all. So, as we've said, isn't that like Mad Men is really a twist-heavy program? Although last night, there were some things that happened that I did not expect. If you don't want to be spoiled for last night's episode of Mad Men, you might want to, keep this down to a dull roar, as they say. And, I'll make a klaxon noise of some kind when we're done. So last night started, actually, with something that I should have seen coming but didn't, which is that, what's her name? Joan Harris, I guess? That's her married name, maybe. So that Joan is now pregnant, presumably because Roger Stupter, after that foiled, or that, not even the foil, but the mugging that they survived a couple weeks ago, where they get mugged and then, you know, all the adrenaline turns to romping energy. And so he sticks it to her in an alley, and then she turns up and she says she's very late.
By the way, and that also happened on Dexter. And I'm just going to, is this something that really happens a lot, or is this more of just sort of a convention that
where you live through the near death or the traumatic experience and then you're overwhelmed with the urge to procreate?
Yeah, because, you know, I've never had, like, you know, some of these experiences, but I've been scared by things many times, and stupping someone was not the first thing on my mind.
I don't know. It might be more of a male trait, and here's why I say that. Because Michael Crichton actually wrote about this. Michael Crichton, he has a great book called Travels, which is a series of nonfiction essays from just, places he went. It's a little bit like the Douglas Adams book, Last Chance to See, actually. It lacks the overarching theme of endangered species, but he just traveled the world, did a lot of, he climbed, Mount Fuji and whatever. But he talked about swimming with sharks, and he went to a place where you could actually swim, and there were like blue tip sharks and like the occasional great white that would show up, but it was one of those sort of adventure, True Grit kind of things that you would pay on, and a guy would take you out and you would swim in the vicinity of sharks. And he said that when he went into this lagoon and there were these sharks that theoretically were man-eaters. I mean, they could have eaten him, he said. And they didn't usually, but he was aware that he could have been killed at any moment. He said that when he got out of the lagoon after swimming with the sharks, that, like, his whole thing was just to get back to the hotel and find the first woman who would F him. And then to just, like, bonk her senseless throughout the night. And he said that he believed that it had to do with your body realizing subconsciously it came close to death and I gotta get some of this seed out there before I die. So maybe it's a guy thing. I don't know.
No, I can buy, because I read a book. I can't remember which book it was, but there was something, and they were talking about swingers and people who do the whole go to swing parties,
right,
that sort of thing. And apparently it's really revitalizing for couples who do that, mainly for the men.
Because it's a jealousy thing.
Because there's apparently something that's just fundamentally wired in our lizard brains, the male brain, and particularly to have this sort of dominancy of semen or something, that if your woman, it's another reason why a lot of times if a couple have been separated for some period of time, the first thing the guy wants to do when they get back together is have sex. It's like, because you don't, even if you know intellectually your wife has been on a business trip and she hasn't been sleeping with anyone else, there's this actual primitive thing
blocking the goal.
And it's like, well, yeah, and yeah, it's like she could have been there could have been another male somewhere, so I have to like reassert
my this. Seed must compete.
And it's like, yeah, and apparently the knowing for a fact, maybe in some cases even seeing that your wife is with another guy, is like you have this deep-seated need now to do her yourself, because you've got to, like, you know, got to like reassert dominance, you know, both semen wise and what have you. So maybe that's it. Maybe
reasserting
that's
dominance, semen-wise, the Rick Emerson Show.
But I guess that is. There's these things that
it's a primal thing
that happen, I mean, in the brain that we don't have any control.
Well, everything. I mean, really. I mean, now we're so far afield from the Mad Men talk, but I mean, I think everything is.
I just like saying semen-wise for some reason.
But on the semen hand, but I mean, everything is about evolution ultimately.
Yeah.
Because as this Bill Bryson guy that I've been referencing so much recently said, he's like, you know, your brain doesn't know anything else. He's like, your lizard brain doesn't know about advanced technology. It doesn't know about skyscrapers and like electric skillets. All it knows is like, we're here and we got to make more of us. So like, let's get on it, pal.
Yeah.
So that's the deal. But yeah, so Roger Sterling and Joan hump in an alleyway after they're mugged. She turns up, she's late, but her husband, and it's that extra layer of guilt because her husband is in Vietnam and he's been gone for 7 weeks. And so she knows that it's Roger's.
She's Joan. So I'm not sure how actually guilty she felt about it. It was more like, well, this is another problem that needs to be solved.
Well,
we must fix this now.
And she's already had it done once.
Yeah.
She revealed a few weeks ago, her doctor said, well, the procedure you had a few years ago doesn't seem to have impeded your childbearing ability. So she already had one abortion. And there was actually a really great, subtle moment when Joan is in the waiting room at the abortion clinic, or whatever they called it then, at the doctor to have her vapors balanced or whatever, whether euphemism they used. And she's talking to a woman who's there with her teenage daughter. And the woman's like, oh, they grow up so fast. I mean, I know I had her at 17, but I never thought she'd be in this condition at that same age. And the woman assumes that Joan is there with her own daughter.
Yeah.
And she says, so, ma'am, how old is your daughter? And Joan, that actress, Christina Hendricks, she does the greatest little half pause. And she says, 15. And so it tells you everything you need to know, which is that she had her abortion 15 years ago, because she's doing the thing that I'm told a lot of women who have had that procedure do, where they calculate how old the kid would be. It was a really great episode. And then the big news from last night, and I have questions for you about this.
Okay.
The big thing that happened last night in Mad Men is that they got this, the new account that the agency got was with, it was like the U.S. Department of Defense, basically. And so they had to do a background check and a security check, as the government does when they sign contracts. And as part of that, Don Draper became convinced, somewhat justifiably, that they would discover his secret identity and the fact that he went AWOL and has been living under an assumed name, and Dick Whitman stole the real Don Draper's identity. And then maybe I missed something, because at the end of the episode, and I went back and I watched it again, but this all happens, and then he somehow, like Jedi mind tricks Pete Campbell into just forfeiting the $4 million account and stopping the investigation. And I never really was able to figure out why Pete Campbell did that. I don't know what happened there.
That took me by surprise as well.
I saw it twice and I don't know.
Yeah. That seemed really abrupt. Well, this whole episode, as much as I liked it, as much as it was, it also, it seemed like sort of one of those, you know, and we're really moving the story along.
Ramping up for the finale.
For this one. Yeah, yeah. It was kind of like, and this happens, and this happens, you know, because, yeah, that was so fast. It was like sort of like, hey, we're FBI guys. Hey, we're asking right. questions. Crap, I got to do something about that. Pete, fix it. And then Pete's like, sorry, no account.
And, you know, and Pete actually notes at one point, he says, you know, I'm walking away from $4 million worth of account here if we forfeit this. And he asks Don, he says, I should do this, why? And there was never really, and maybe I just missed it, but there was never really any explanation given. And the reason I think that it's like my fault somehow is that that's so unlike Mad Men to just have a deus ex machina like that is where something resolves for no real reason. So I'm going to have to go back and watch it a third time and see exactly why that all came to pass, because I don't really know what Pete Campbell's motivation was there. The really nifty trick about that, though, was that it covered myriad sins up to and including the fact that Roger Sterling just lost the Lucky Strike account.
The only reason I can think that Pete did this, because he has that one line where he says, I don't have to live with your S over my head.
Right.
But in fact, I think Pete realizes that to an extent he still does. Pete has become pretty savvy about what his place is in this company. He's a partner now, and he knows how important Don is to the company. And so I think that at this point, I think, you know, and maybe this is me just reading it.
He knows he'd be cutting his own throat if Don were to go.
Right, and because they did give us that scene with him and the pregnant wife and him sort of being sort of cozy and settled and happy. And
right.
I think what we're getting is a Pete who is kind of like actually starting to grow up and kind of figure stuff out. And one of the things he knows is that
it is still in his best interest.
At this point, having Don in the company is more important than that one particular account.
Okay, and whatever satisfaction he would get by screwing him, or even the short-term monetary gain, he would lose in the end by not.
He's playing a long game now. He has a kid on the way, and he actually is happy in his marriage, and he's a partner in the company.
No, that's the best way to put it. He's playing the long-term game. That Don still is to some degree the indispensable man. Okay, I can get that. Here's, by the way, now I have a prediction. This is not a spoiler, because it's just a prediction. I don't know anything about anything. I'm just guessing. And this is based on what you just referenced, which is Pete being in bed with whatever her name is, Judy Campbell, his wife.
Yeah.
Is that Judy? Yeah, but his wife. And so they're in bed, and he's saying, you know, there's people who go through this life, and you know, they're dishonest, and all the honest people have to, like, fix their messes and live with their mistakes and whatever. And I'm thinking, A, B, C, D, E, F. Like, you knocked up Peggy and she gave your kid away.
Right.
And so my theory, though, is that push will come to shove. Pete will try to screw Dom by turning him into the man, and Peggy will blackmail him with the kid into not doing it.
Yeah, I could see that.
And then that will cement the bond between Peggy and Don. And here's the other great thing about that is then it also sets up this weird mutually assured destruction/Mexican standoff where Peggy, Don, and Pete all know each other's secrets. And then you've got this triumvirate, any of whom could sort of destroy the other.
Well, here's a question I have for you is that the FBI came to talk to Betty about Don, and all of the questions they were asking her were basically to find out, you know, if he was possibly a communist.
Right.
They didn't seem to have any clue or be at all interested in his fake identity.
What magazines does he say? Is he a radical?
So my question then is, if Don had just let it go, if he hadn't had an anxiety attack, a complete panic fit,
right,
would they have ever found out at all? Because it didn't seem like that's what they were looking for.
They weren't after that. Because they were interviewing his neighbors, and that's not a thing you do if you want to find out if he has a fake identity.
Right.
That's if he has beatniks over. That's
and the thing is that Betty did a poor job of telling him what it was they were actually asking about.
Right.
Because she was completely... She didn't get it.
Right.
She didn't know what they were getting at.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is like he doesn't... I think that's the great thing about that situation is they probably wouldn't have found out because, as you said, they were looking to see if he was, like, if he'd swallowed the red bait. Not that he was... Because, like, who would ever think that, like, oh, and he stole the identity of a guy who blew up next to him in a foxhole in Korea? Like, no one ever would ever think that. So they were checking on that, but the misery of being Don Draper is you have to treat every shoe like the other shoe that is falling, you know? You have to treat everything... as the potential undoing. Everything is a worst case scenario unless it's proven differently.
Interesting. Also, I watched, I couldn't, normally I will, Well, I will find this the episode of Mad Men in some fashion whatsoever. This time what I did was I actually purchased it from Amazon, and I watched it on Amazon. I thought when I was watching it, for some reason, I was going to mention this, that Amazon, for some reason, had censored when Roger uses the F-word.
Oh, he drops it in the air. Yeah.
But apparently, no. That was AMC. It actually went out that way, off of AMC. So what was the deal with AMC actually censoring Roger saying that something was effed up?
They've done that before. They've done that with Breaking Bad. On Breaking Bad, they will let anything go. I mean, we had this last week about like the breaking point in profanity is the F word. You now anyway on network television, because you'll know like on FX when you watch The Shield or anything like that, they'll have all kinds of profanity. But it's like the F word is where they draw the line. AMC did that with Breaking Bad, where there was a sequence where somebody is talking to somebody else and the character says, you know what? Well, guess what? I effed so-and-so. And you see the mouth form the word, and I think their logic is that, A, they can put it out on a DVD later and it'll be uncensored, it'll be uncut, and that's a little bit of a selling point. And also, I think as corny and as cheesy as this sounds, I think AMC probably says to themselves, they don't want to tamper with the vision of the script and of the director. But they have to walk a fine line because they already use some profanity. Yeah. They have partial nudity occasionally. But they know there's only so far they can push it before some parents group gets all tight-assed about it. So the best of all worlds is to film it and bleep it, and then they can put it out uncensored later.
Okay,
you know?
Yeah.
You know?
I don't think I'd really notice them doing it on Mad Men before, but then again,
they've done it. You know, the very first episode had the F word. People forget this. Pete said it in the very first episode, and they didn't bleep it. They did a really great thing with Pete in the very first episode, where he was talking to Don in the hallway, and he says, you know, F you, and he says it, and he turns away as he says it, and so it trails off. They didn't even have to bleep it. It was masterful. They almost had to do it in post-production. It was so well done. But they've done that on several shows on AMC. So I think that must be. And, you know, the first series to do that was Action with Jay Moore. They were the first series to say, like, screw it. We're going to film the profanity and we'll bleep it later. Yeah. So I think that's part of a new trend.
So I want to know how this whole thing is going to play out, too, with them losing the Lucky Strike account. Because that is the meat and potatoes of their
business. Well, the guy said he's got 30 days.
Right. But Roger still didn't tell them.
Right.
So, and Roger had that. There was a whole scene with him going through his apparently outdated Rolodex trying to. Now Roger's actually trying to drum up some business for the company to cover his ass. But is this going to be too little too late?
The frustrating thing about it is I already know how the season's going to end. It's just going to end with a big sort of cliffhanger. It's going to end with, you know, it's going to end with everything being painted into a corner and there being no apparent way out. Because last season ended so satisfyingly. Last season almost could have been the finale of the show, right? Because, you know, they started Sterling Cooper Draper Price. They were in the hotel and Joan answered the phone. She said, good afternoon, Sterling Cooper Draper Price. And you're like, aha, the kids have started there. They put on a show and started their own business. It wasn't a cliffhanger. You went, okay, I'm not going to live in agonizing suspense. So now this year, I bet they'll screw us by giving us some sort of, but you can't mean, but then, and then, you know, next season on Mad Men.
And speaking of Price, who knew he had such daddy issues?
Oh, I hate that
guy. My God.
That guy bugs me, and, you know, he's bugged me for a while, but as soon as his dad shows up, I lose instant. I know he's a made-up television character and he's not a real person, but the whole like grown men who are beholden to their dads thing, like I just instantly think less of. And I'm not saying you can't like love your parents and respect your parents and whatever. That's a different thing. But you and I both know like grown adults who are like wrapped around their parents, who still act like their children.
Yeah.
Where it's like the parent says jump and they jump. And it's like that is the instant way to lose my respect. And when he did that, immediately I just wrote that character off.
Well, the first situation, the first case with like him, you know, parading the new girlfriend in front of his dad as if he's completely unaware.
Right.
That having this girlfriend who's like half his age and black.
Right.
Is not going to cause a huge problem.
So awkward, too, and it, like when she's in her Playboy bunny outfit at the Playboy Club,
yes.
And he's like trying to get his grope on, and you know, and it's so creepy and sad.
His character has become really super creepy.
He really has become, and I hate to say this because it makes me sound like I'm just generalizing. He's just become so much like of what I he has become almost a caricature of how British men are depicted sometimes, where they're just
how they're depicted,
these weak, like foppish. men. And his dad obviously isn't that way, but it's like British guys are just such wet noodles sometimes in terms of popular depiction. So,
I wonder sometimes if American like television and movies, television
projecting.
Particularly, well, if there's not a little bit of jealousy.
Maybe.
Because everybody, particularly people in show business, know that like the women just
Love the Brits.
They love the accent. So it says like, well, we'll just make them look like a bunch of
seriously
of drippy weenies.
They're all like early era Hugh Grant. I mean, basically, they're all just foppish and blinking their eyes a lot and going, well, I just don't know what to do, you know. And then somebody punches them, and then an American, you know, shows up and saves the day. There you go. There's your Mad Men recap. Don't forget, the Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by The Cleaning Solution, among other businesses. They're one of our proud business partners here. You can find out more about them at 971-533-3211, 971-533-3211. We come back. We'll do the second half of our recap. We'll talk at Dexter, and we will have a little more news for you today. We've still got the Taser watch to get to. We'll try to pack in that clergy watch as well. There's your Mad Men recap. You're listening to The Rick Emerson Show on the Emerson News Network.
Programs. Aaron Duran here with geekinthecity.com, and this is your juicy week in geek. First up, if you ever need an example of the confirmation of extraterrestrials, or at least the perfect example of way too much time and money, the United Nations has officially appointed a Take Me to Your Leader ambassador from Earth. Malaysian astrophysicist Mazlan Othma is the new head of outer space affairs. I thought about saying something witty here about Vogons and intergalactical superhighways, but really, we have an ambassador to space now, so enough said. Next, on October 11th, perhaps the greatest film ever made will hit DVD. From the land of the rising sun, I present Big T Zombie. What's it about? I don't know, but it's called Big T Zombie. It's in 3D. Old school red and blue 3D. It stars Japanese strippers, chainsaws, zombies, strippers that are Japanese. Why did I include it in the Week in Geek? I mean, hello. It's called Big Tits Zombie. Big Tits Zombie. Finally, in Portland on October 1st through the 3rd, witness the last rising of the H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival. Playing at the Hollywood Theater in Northeast Portland, the Lovecraft Film Festival is the country's largest Lovecraft and Cthulhu con. With feature films, shorts, horror panels, and Lovecraftian art, it is everything the little cultist needs. Tickets are just $18 a day or $46 for an anthropomorphic 3-day pass. The end is nigh, my friends. Worship the Dark Lords while you can. I am Aaron Duran of geekinthecity.com, and that was your Week in Geek.
I'm not knocking it. It's just CthulhuCon. That's... We were talking... earlier about, you know, how it's like if one of my older relatives or perhaps, you know, my in-laws were to go to your home and see, I mean, really any room in your house. I mean, the kitchen, the living room. I'm presuming the bedroom is no more normal than the rest of your abode. I mean, that's where you got the skulls, right? Are the skulls in your bedroom?
Well, no, I've got the one in the living room. And
where's the one? I must have missed the skull in the living room. Which one?
It's right in the middle of the living room wall between the Army of Darkness poster and the...
I did see that.
The weird, creepy dead baby painting.
No, I did see that. Where do you keep the rat skull?
Oh, actually, the gopher skull or whatever.
Is that what Scott Landerville brought you? Is it a gopher skull?
It's actually still in my car. I haven't figured out where to go, so it's in this little
waiting to be seen by a police officer.
Dashboard of my car.
Anything I should see in the trunk, ma'am?
But if you went into the bathroom, off the master bedroom, for example, there's like another odd painting there, and I've got a couple of like creepy doll heads. So, you know, I tried to spread the joy out.
We should
throughout.
Do like a little, you know, we don't do, you know, we have this whole network and, the studio and a website and whatever. We don't do a lot of video stuff. We had to do like a little tour of your house.
Yeah, you were at Siegfried was walking through at one point, just going from room to room and looking at things and commenting on them.
Yeah, so. when you can weird that guy out, I mean, that's really, the bar is set pretty high. We should do that at some point. We should do a little, you know, sort of like an E&N Cribs kind of a thing. And we'll just, but really, it would just start and end with you. I mean, that's like, you'd be the only place we go.
Oh, no, we would have to go to your house, too.
We'll postpone that idea. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program here on the Emerson News Network, brought to you by, among other folks, Mr. Michael Beatty. He's the owner and proprietor of The Cleaning Solution. And The Cleaning Solution, you can reach them at 971-533-3211, 971-533-3211. And by the way, somebody asked me where, you know, if that's, you know, if that's written down, or if there's, you know, there's a place you can find that information. If you're listening to it, you don't have time to write it down. You just go to rickemerson.com/contact. You just go to the contact section at rickemerson.com, and there's all of the, you know, the mailing address for us and, you know, the phone numbers and whatever. But then there's also our business partners are listed there as well, including Mr. Michael Beatty, 971-533-3211. So whatever the room in your house might be that needs some attending to, whatever it is that your feet are walking on, touching, if you got, like, maybe a pet, you got a child, maybe you got a pet and a child, maybe you got a pet that's more like a child or a child that acts like a pet. Any combination of the above is eventually going to take a toll on everything in your home. It's going to be the upholstery, the linoleum, the vinyl. What did your dad, you said your dad did the entire house on like AstroTurf or something?
Well, there was flagstone in the front entryway, and then everything else was this sort of weird stone, 1970s stone-looking linoleum stuff.
Was it just done for ease of cleaning?
Yes.
So he could just sort of, everything could be power washed away?
Yeah, and then there was carpeting in the bedrooms, but then he also, since he built the house himself, he also installed one of those vacuum cleaner systems where you have the outlets on the walls, and then you just pull the vacuum and the hose
central
out.
Central vacuuming.
So we had a central vacuum thingy in the house.
Fantastic.
So, yeah. No, he was, yeah, and in the backyard, the front yard, there was like one area where there were just like these weird, like, have you ever seen those, like, they're like pods of grass that people put in like driveways and things like that? Yeah, that was what our basically front yard area was, where he couldn't concrete. And then, yeah, two-door garage with concrete in front of that. And then the whole length of the back of the house, the backyard, was just concrete.
Was your father a serial killer? No offense.
No, he was crazy.
Just crazy.
He was just crazy, but it was sort of like...
Regular Taylor family.
I am never gardening or mowing a lawn ever again.
And the thing is, I can't poke too much fun because I have often said, I used to joke when I was a kid that when I grew up, I just wanted to have AstroTurf for my lawn because I loathed yard work. Still do. You know, and it's mowing the lawn, edging, trimming, anything like that. And it's like, and then frankly, the carpet... I mean, that's that sort of thing where you like to walk. They need to have some carpet of the future, you know, where it's like it. I don't even know how it would work. Where it's soft and yielding, but then you can just sort of go and just spray it, you know. And I just don't even know how that works.
Well,
there's just nothing you
actually,
can do.
Actually, we shouldn't even get into this now. We're in the middle of a commercial. There's this company called Floor, F-L-O-R.
What do they sell?
Carpet.
And, just effing with you.
But the thing is, you get different kinds of carpet, and they come in these squares, these big 3-foot by 3-foot squares, and you buy as many as you need to carpet your floor, and you peel off the back, and you install it yourself in these squares. But the thing is, you can also, if they need to be cleaned, or if you need to replace anything,
right,
you can pull them up.
A single square out.
Yeah, so you can actually pull it up. You can take it to the sink in your bathroom, and you can clean just the one thing.
That's fantastic.
So that, but I still think, though, but again, though, unless you have that, if you have regular carpet, you kind of need to have, like, a guy come and
that guy is Michael Beatty.
Clean it.
His number is 971-533-3211, 971-533-3211. It's a Portland business keeping his money right here, not only by advertising and supporting this very fine radio program in this network, but also getting his supplies, his accessories, all of that from other Portland businesses. So whatever your feet might touch in the house, he can get it clean and he can keep it clean. 971-533-3211, The Cleaning Solution. That is Mr. Michael Beatty. Please tell him you heard it here on the Emerson News Network.
You're listening to The Rick Emerson Show. This is the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964 and so forth. So this Friday, we'll have kind of a big-ish announcement. Large-ish, I would say. Somewhere between medium and gigantic. So that's coming up this Friday right here.
It will involve listeners being able to win exceptionally cool and valuable prizes.
That's what I'm saying. And also a fistful of virtual cash.
Yes.
So that could be yours. So we'll have details on that this coming Friday. 503-505-6964. We'll do our Dexter recap here in just a moment. At the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Let us do our taser watch.
Here's your taser watch for Monday right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
Don't taste me, bro.
Here's Don Taylor with your Taser Watch.
A Cheyenne, Wyoming man who doused himself with white latex paint in hopes of avoiding a taser was hit with a stun gun anyway. The taser chase happened September 16th when Cheyenne police went to Brian Mattert's house on a domestic violence call. The Wyoming Tribune Eagle reports that when police arrived, Mattert thought they'd use a taser on him, so he hastily covered himself in latex paint and told officers that if they shot him with the stun gun, he would die. Officers told him that the paint would not affect the taser's capability. According to police, Mattert scuffled with officers and was hit with a taser twice before officers handcuffed
him. So I don't understand, but what was his... Why would he die? Was he claiming that... Was he thinking they would think that the paint would burst into flames or something?
Something like... Maybe, yeah, or... I don't know.
No, you're thinking of something else, sir, like maybe gasoline or something flammable.
Yeah.
No. And so they just take... So now you're tased and also you're covered in paint.
You're covered in white latex paint.
Wow. Fantastic. Well done.
He faces several criminal charges and police say the officer's uniforms had to be cleaned.
All right. There you go. There's your taser watch for Monday. By the way, this is in reference to your Jack in the Box story earlier. Somebody just says, I like a woman who starts her day with a sausage. And then he puts, ha ha.
I don't get it.
Okay. Here's Don Taylor. Let's do one more here and we'll do our Dexter recap.
A teenager in Florida stole...
I'm sorry, a teenager where?
Florida.
That's what I'm saying.
Stole a car from a local lot and then left his driver's license inside the vehicle when he returned it. Miles Jared Overway, 17, was charged with Grand Theft Auto. According to a sheriff's report, on September 15th, Overway and another man visited the Car Care Center in Port Charlotte, Florida, and inquired about buying a 1999 Ford Crown Victoria. Detectives say the duo took the car for a test drive and brought it back, but did not return the keys. The car was reported stolen later that night. The next morning, the business owner reported the car was returned and parked in the lot. During the investigation, a deputy opened a driver's door and saw Overway's Florida driver's license between the door and the seat.
The irony there, too, is that this is for a joyride. Is that the deal?
Apparently so.
You know, like we'll boost a Crown Vic, which, by the way, is like across the board in like half the country is what cops use for their cars. So there's a little extra comedy value for you. But I mean, I guess maybe his plan is that there's nobody there at night, and as long as the cars are there in the morning and there in the evening...
And we have the keys. Yeah.
And we got the keys, so, like, what do they care?
Right. And deputies also say the car was returned with various electronic items inside missing.
Okay.
So they, like, stole the stereo, too. Awesome. On Wednesday, Overway was arrested, taken to county jail, and then released to his parents' custody.
Oh,
he looks like a...
Is he a real winner?
Yeah, he's a winner.
Oh, that's... Wow. And check out, okay, here's the thing. I don't know if this is a glitch with the printer or if it's the way the picture actually looks.
The nostril?
Yeah, what is up with that?
I don't know.
You gotta, okay, you should test the whole uploading the photograph thing. Do you have the email that I sent you with the address and the whatever? Okay, so we're going to, you know, and I'll actually have to modify the site so it's visible, but we'll test this. We'll test this business of updating the photo gallery, because that nostril is huge on this guy. I mean, it's immense. It makes me wonder.
I think it's actually the printer, because he does have, you know, prominent nostrils, but it's not as bad as that.
Yeah, I'm just so. I'm just.
But boy, when you enlarge the picture to larger size, he's got bad skin.
He looks like a thoroughly unpleasant boy. Let's just say that. So if you go to rickemerson.com/pictures, rickemerson.com/pictures, and then go to visual aids for September 27th, 2010, here in a couple, minute or two, you'll be able to see a photograph of Miles Jared Overway with this nostril. It's almost like he tripped and then just like fell on the narrow end of a croquet mallet, and it just went right up one side of his face. All right, so you go. You can find that there in just a skosh. In the meantime, I want to take this opportunity to tell you that this Florida story, the preceding Taser Watch, and the picture of this guy with a gigantic nostril, these things are made possible by y'all, of course, and your very kind patronage and support of this radio program, support that is never, ever taken for granted. That means the world to us and always has. And also by our business partners, including Castalia Language Center. And this is normally where Don would interject something pithy, perhaps in the Spanish tongue, crudely cobbled together from Google Translate. But as she's busy putting a photograph of said nostril guy up, you just can't imagine that inside your own head. I will tell you that on the agenda, so my wife is, who's like way smarter than I am in every way, she's leaving the country next week. She's going to be gone for like a whole month. So, like, I'm just going to be covered in just like filth and mold. I mean, I'll basically just be mossy by the time she gets back. So she's been gone for a month. When she gets back, she and I are actually going to be taking classes at Castalia Language Center to learn Spanish because, and we're at two different levels. So it'll be, I don't know how if they're going to keep us in the same class or if they're going to break us up and put us in like different classes or something. But
I would if I was her. I don't think that the two of you should be in the same class.
I don't want to sit next to
them. It's a recipe for disaster.
I don't want to be near the class clown. He distracts from the learning environment. Because they do put a premium on the, you know, you being able to learn quickly. And they do that by keeping the class size real small. It's 8 people maximum. It's a maximum of 8 people. And it's adults only. There's no kids, no teenagers. You know, there's regular schools for that. And also adults just learn differently. So whether you are an intermediate Spanish speaker, whether you're an advanced Spanish speaker but you want to polish up on it, or whether you're just starting out, they can find something that works with your schedule, with your hours, with all of that. And again, they're in downtown Portland. Clara Greville is the one who runs that. She's a native Spanish speaker from Argentina. You can find out more about it at portlandspanish.com. portlandspanish.com. Have ye uploaded the
it should be there.
The nostril guy.
If it worked, it will be there.
Hold on a second. Let me just see. Visual aids. Nostril guy. I think I may have to I'll have to click on this here in a second. All right. I do believe the nostril man is there. There he is. There you go. So if you go to rickemerson.com/pictures, go to September 27th, the visual aids, you'll see a photograph of this guy. Okay, now here's the thing. It's the printer. Mm-hmm. It's not even his face or in fact, the newspaper. It is, in fact, the printer because it looks totally normal. He still looks spotty and unlikable.
Oh, yeah.
Though.
Well, enlarge the picture and look at it big and you'll see just like what horrifically bad skin he has.
Yeah, no. He looks like a really, he looks like an unsuccessful, talentless George Thorogood. That's what he is right there. All right, there you go. Well, should we talk Dexter, Don Taylor?
Yes.
All right. So last night, episode 1, season 5 of Dexter. I hate to start things off with a negative tip, but I give it a big meh.
Yeah, I did too.
I found myself doing other things, like checking my email, like clipping my toenails, you know, just like, you know, and just looking up to see if he was killing somebody and then like going back to whatever I was
doing. I was wanting so much more from this and just kind of like,
I had such hopes when they killed Rita off, and I know that sounds horrible because she's got kids and whatever, but it's like that character, I was talking to somebody about Dexter, I was thinking that they had seen the error of their ways, that not unlike Californication, they realized at a certain point, oh my God, we've frittered away an entire season of a once great television series, and we've just turned it into a big pile of dreck. We're going to pull it out at the end, and we're going to reverse course, and we're going to turn over a new leaf, and by killing off Rita, who was shrill and annoying and who everybody disliked. But no, it was just like an entire hour of Dexter just sitting and, like, moping around. You know, and I understand dead wife and whatever, but it's like there's an interesting way to show those things. Yeah. Last night was not it.
No.
Nothing actually happened last night, except that his sister humped, what's his name, Quinn.
Yeah. Well, and eventually, and he killed a guy, just in cold blood.
No, it's true. He bludgeoned that guy in the bathroom.
Which, you know, that was the one part of the show that I actually kind of perked up a little too, because it's like, okay, so is this what he's going to start struggling with now? Because he has crossed a line now.
So he'll become like an impulse killer as opposed to a serial killer.
Yeah, because he just spent that entire last season basically in his own way kind of admiring Trinity,
right,
almost as a father figure.
Right.
And now he himself, in just a rage, has just killed a guy. Just because.
Okay, that's kind of interesting. I never thought about that because I was busy being distracted by... I know this makes me sound like a nutcase, so you just have to forgive me. I was talking to Bobby and Bobby about this at your party on Saturday. The thing that was... You mentioned... I've never watched Monk, and you said that the problem with Monk is that they can only sustain the gag of him being an OCD guy, like, so long.
Yeah.
And it's like, how long can you wring that dish towel before it's dry? And you're like, now it's just a regular, you know, detective show or whatever he does. The thing that I found really interesting about Dexter was that he was a true sociopath. He was just, like, emotionally empty and vacant, not actually evil, but just lacking feelings. And that he was with Rita, And he was unable to make romantic or sexual contact with women normally, but that's okay because she'd been brutalized and wasn't interested in sex, so it was a perfect relationship. It was just so weird and effed up. And he has that in the pilot where he's handing out donuts at the station, and he says, now the box is empty, just like me. You know, and it was all sort of, the whole show was the guy trying to fake being human. But it's like now that's gone because they've done this Pinocchio becomes a real boy thing where he's developed real feelings. So now he's just like a regular guy who has like done some bad things, which makes him like everybody else on television.
Yeah.
There's just nothing interesting to me about the character now.
No, I was hoping at the end because he said he was destroying his container full of stuff. And this one, which I don't know. I was sort of torn because when he first said, it's like, I got to do this and I got to cover up, get rid of some stuff, and then I got to like gas up my boat. And I thought, maybe he's going to take off.
Right.
Maybe he's just going to leave. And now the show is going to be about him like traveling around and killing people.
He's a pastry chef in Seattle now.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Something.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think they may have finally just run out of steam.
Because at the end, he's... Well, you know, here's the other thing, because you're right, he spends this whole episode basically prepping to bail on his life, on his kids, on his sister, on his whatever, and at the end he's like, I guess I've got to go back, because my creepy dead father, and it's like two shows in a row where his dead father's telling him to do stuff, so he goes back.
And like somebody mentioned in the text box, it's like, okay, and now we're setting up that Quinn is going to be like somebody who's going to end up getting, he's going to be the new Dokes, because, he's on him, so he's going to end up having to die because it's like, oh, and he's going to be sleeping with the sister,
Just kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, that was, and I saw it like a mile away when they were cleaning the house together. I was like, and now they're going to have sex, and then sure enough, I see their problem though because I don't know if you've read any of the Dexter books.
No.
I hate that they're not very good. First of all, I mean, they're not terrible. They're kind of badly written. They're just a little clunky. They're like not as bad as the Twilight books, but they're kind of bad in that same way where the writing is just real chunky. It's not smooth. But you know the thing is with the show, I have sympathy for the people who create the show Dexter because they can't follow the books anymore because the books. There's this split that happened. There are two things that happen in the books. One interesting, which I don't think they could get away with. The other is just too insane. Nobody would buy it. The first, and I don't mean to spoil this, so if you're going to read the book someday, you know, whatever. But in the books, his kids witness the murder, and then he realizes his kids are becoming sociopaths, so he becomes the Harry, and he tutors his kids to become sociopaths. That's interesting. I don't think even Showtime could get away with that.
On that note, actually, just to take a quick aside, what was actually better than Dexter this week, which I love Dexter, but I never thought I'd say this. What was better than Dexter this week was the season premiere of Criminal Minds, which was the follow-up to a cliffhanger they left at the end of last season with Tim Curry as this completely creepy serial killer guy. And he kills this cop, and he snatches the cop's kid, who is, they mentioned in the premiere thing, when they mentioned she's 8, and that actress is no way she's 8. She's more like 12, but still, whatever. But he takes the kid, he rapes the girl's aunt in front of her and kills her dad, like, right in front of her. Then takes her, then, like, lets her go at some point, and she runs up to a house to try and get help, and he uses that as his entree to go into the house and now kill that family. And he's telling her, we're going to be a great team. We're
going to
be
creepy.
Like, awesome. And she's like, I'm not going to be your team. And it turns out that he's got this kind of twisted thing where it's almost like he's going to like be her grandfather.
You're my sidekick.
Because he felt like if he hadn't, the dad who was a cop, he had let him live in one of his very first crimes when he was a kid. And he had, like, raped his mom and killed somebody in front of him and let him live. And so in his mind, this little girl, the cop's daughter, wouldn't even be alive if he hadn't let... So he's kind of her grandpa.
That is complete. And it's Tim Curry is just, like, horrible and perfect.
And he's like, he's none of that. He's like, he's Tim Curry who's now kind of, like, puffy and old and a little on the heavy side. And he's playing a guy who, like, smokes, like, crack incessantly. So his teeth are, like, greenish brown in the front. He's very creepy. But the thing is, this little girl has been through so much with this thing of seeing her dad killed and the aunt raped and then being used to get into the house. And she helps a kid escape and everything. But there's the end of the show when they save the little girl and they kill Tim Curry and all this sort of thing. I don't know if it's deliberate or not, but the actress, the little girl, has such a creepy, weird kind of a little smile on her face. And it was like, both Patrick and I were both going, so it's like 10 years from now, if the show is still on the air,
she'll be killing people.
We're going to come back to this character.
Well, I have this theory that nothing on television is an accident. You know, everything is intentional. So they probably are. For the 1% that would notice that, they probably planted that. And that's kind of what the Dexter books did, was where he asked her and Cody or whatever, Skyler, you know, they become sociopaths. But so I think even Showtime probably feels like, well, maybe there's not really going to be able to get away with that. But the other thing they do in the books, which is like, it's almost like when Thomas Harris got sick of Hannibal Lecter and thought, like, I'll make him silly and then try to kill him off, you know, so I don't have to, like, write him anymore.
And I'll make this book so bad that there's no way you'll ever make a movie out of it. Oh, wait, you did anyway.
Well, they learned from that because they have not adapted the last couple Dexter books. They've diverged plotline-wise because, and I swear to God, I'm not making this up. This is the spoiler that is, like, from the, I don't know, like, the fourth Dexter novel or something. So, you know, whatever. If you don't want to hear this, you're better off hearing it so you don't have to read it. Where they reveal, I swear to God, they reveal in, like, the last Dexter book, the most recent one, they reveal that the reason Dexter, just as like with Hannibal Lecter, he said, you can't reduce me to a set of influences, you know, Clarice, and then they do exactly that by saying it was his sister Misha who was killed. So Dexter's a serial killer because he's a sociopath, because his mom and the chainsaw. They reveal in the fourth book that the reason Dexter kills is because, wait for it, he is possessed by a 1,000-year-old demon. Not figuratively. He is literally, actually, in point of fact, possessed by a demon who is the Dark Passenger. The Dark Passenger isn't his own psyche, Don. No. You've got it all wrong. It's not that, like, he saw his mom get chainsawed up or something. He is, in fact, possessed by a demon. You know, like a booga booga demon.
Well, that just makes me angry.
Yeah, that's, yeah. So there you go. So you see why they couldn't do that, though.
No.
Because the audience would have revolted. So there you go. And so I'll keep watching it, but I don't expect it to get any better. I hope it does, but
no.
I don't expect it.
Isn't Peter Weller going to be on this season or something?
Maybe. That's the other thing. I found myself losing track. You know, this is
they should have ended after last season because, honestly, I don't think they can top Lithgow.
They
can never top Lithgow.
Totally. And I kept, this is the biggest indicator that the show is in trouble, is that all last night I kept forgetting Lithgow was dead, and I kept waiting for him to show up. I'm like, when will Trinity get here? I think they might have made a mistake in killing him off. They should have. This whole big bad one per season thing, they should have kept Lithgow around because he was great, and they're not going to get another one of him.
Or they should have just found a way to use that as a way to close out the show entirely.
Yeah, they never show out. They never close out the show in time. No one ever does that. I mean, you know, I can count on less than one hand. We could almost do that as a top five, like shows that ended at exactly the right moment. Mm-hmm. You know, but it almost never happened. So, no, I'll keep watching it, but I mean, you know. And especially because Mad Men's going to end in, what, like 3 episodes or something, so that it'll ease up my TV viewing. Because it's a chore. Are you going to watch Eastbound and Down tonight?
Oh, yeah.
All right. You don't have to spend a lot of time.
And Boardwalk Empire, because I want to see.
I haven't seen any
how
of
that
those.
Follow. Well, this is only the second one.
I didn't see the pilot, the Scorsese one.
Yeah, the pilot was last week, so last night's episode was the second one.
All right. But do you think I should, is it worth watching?
I don't know.
Should I wait?
You should wait, because we'll see. I have no idea if it's going to play out well or not. So
I'll wait and let you be the barometer.
Okay.
All right. And so there you go. Well, let's we'll bring a curtain down on this whole thing. So, and we're ending. So, thank you for joining us. Join us tomorrow when we'll have a variety of smattering of things, including tomorrow we'll have another installment of The Greatest Songs Ever, plus another top five coming up tomorrow as well. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, here high above the milk packing district in beautiful Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, it is Don Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa, and the Rick Emerson Show made possible today and every day by a generous grant from you. So thank you kindly. It is Monday, September 27th, 2010, and that is The Frequency, Kenneth. A little musical interlude next, followed by an encore of Legion of News, an encore of this program. We'll see you tomorrow after Legion of News. Thanks for listening. Be safe. See you all tomorrow. Bye now.
The production of the Emerson News Network.